Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
And here with me today on the program to discuss one of them is Craig McKee. Craig McKee is a 9/11 researcher and journalist who lives in Canada. He's the secretary for the monthly 9/11 and other deep state events teleconference. He hosts the website truthandshadows.com, and he's joining me today to discuss his recent initiative on the Pentagon. Craig McKee, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Cheryl. I'm glad to be with you.
So you've recently created a list of people who agree with the statement, no 757 hit the Pentagon. Could you tell us a bit about why you created this list and any other details about it?
Sure. I've been thinking for some time. I mean, the Pentagon is generally conceded to be where a lot of the apparent controversy exists in the 9/11 truth movement. There is a small group of researchers, some of whom have familiar names to people in the movement, who have been working for several years now to convince us that a large plane, a 757 specifically, did hit the Pentagon on the official flight path, that it did knock over the five light poles, hit the building, go right through three rings of the building and make a nice round exit hole at the end. I feel that the evidence is overwhelming that there was no 757 impact, and I felt that because the rest of the movement seems to be a bit divided on specifically what did happen. Some people think it was a missile, some people think it was a global hawk, or perhaps a military plane, or a commuter jet. There's all different possibilities, but the thing that everybody has in common, or the majority, I think, have in common, is that they don't believe it was a 757. So I felt that because there was so much, I guess you could say, division over details, that it was important to bring everyone together under this fundamental statement, which is that a 757 did not hit the Pentagon. Because this way, I personally don't support the missile position, but I know there are people who do, and it's really, I think, unnecessary for us to debate whether one theory or another theory is correct, when really, if we unite under this statement, then really the official story has to be false. If we're right about what we're saying, and if the evidence against the 757 impact is persuasive, then the official story is toast. So that's kind of the theory behind it. And also, I think there was a false impression being given that the group of researchers that I mentioned earlier, that they somehow were gaining ground and that some sort of consensus was forming around their position. And this is only because this is what they claim. They claim that a consensus is forming when I think there is no such consensus on their side. So I felt it was important for people to register their position and to agree on this fundamental point.
I think you've done a great job of getting a position that we could all support, even within that having differences about what did hit the Pentagon or not. So I like that. It's a way of uniting us around that one simple point. And it sounds like you've gotten a lot of support for that. Can you tell us who signed it and how many and anything that might be of interest that way?
Yes. The effort started about a month ago. So I actually got the number onto the list even before the list was published. I got it up to about 545 names, which was a lot of work, because I try to include also, you know, a little bit of identifying information, you know, which city people are from, or only country if they prefer. So in that time, since we published about a week ago, we've actually got it up to 670 some odd names, 673, something like that. And some of the, I think, most respected names in the movement have added their names. Among those, David Ray Griffin, who is well known for his, I think, 11 or 12 books that he's written on 9/11, and he's also co-founder of the 9/11 Consensus Panel, although he is not adding his name on behalf of the panel. It's strictly on his own. That's an important point to make. But other people like Niels Harrit, a very well-respected Danish researcher who's given hundreds of presentations about 9/11 over the years, Barbara Honegger, who's known for her Pentagon presentations, Elias Davidson, who's a researcher who originally from Iceland, now living in Germany, who's written the book about 9/11 and all about the four flights, and he's made a very strong case that there's no evidence supporting the idea of hijackers on any of the planes. So there's a whole long list of people who have put their names on this. Plus, of course, many, many truthers who haven't written books or anything, but they're still people that are dedicated to finding the truth. So that's where we stand. I hope we have a lot of room to grow. It's not so much a question of how many people agree with the statement as it is how do we reach people.
So you have 673, which is really remarkable in this short amount of time. So what evidence is there that no 757 hit the Pentagon on 9/11?
Well, I think there's a lot and overwhelming evidence. First of all, I believe that the government's claim that there was a 757 impact and that it was Flight 77 specifically, I believe that the burden of proof is on those who make that assertion. So I think they have to prove that this did happen, and I think this is what they are actually not capable of doing. But let's look at some of the things. The most obvious thing, the first thing I think that is inescapable is the fact that there are no large pieces of wreckage that were left outside the Pentagon on that day. And I mean none. When I talk about large pieces of wreckage, I'm talking about something larger than what you could toss in the back of a pickup truck. I don't consider that to be large wreckage. If you can pick it up and walk across the lawn with it in your hand, it's not large wreckage. The official story claims that the plane came in slightly banked to the left and that the right engine clipped a generator trailer on the way in. Now, this would put the right wing impact entirely on the second floor of the building, and there's no hole there. Actually, one of the people who's added his name to our list, another Canadian scientist named A.K. Dewdney, he's the person who did the study of the cell phone calls to show that cell phone calls would have been impossible from the planes at any altitude back in 2001. Anyway, he also did another paper talking about the wings and how the wings, had the plane actually hit the building, that the wings would not have folded in, as some allege, but would have snapped off. And certainly the right wing, there's simply no hole there. Where did the wing go? If the plane hit the building, where did the wing go? The tail section would have hit. I'll mention what the hole looks like, actually, to those who don't know. On the second floor, there's a small hole, maybe 15 or 16 feet wide, with a column going right down the middle of it. And this is supposed to be where the fuselage entered. And on the ground floor, there is a damaged section that's something in the area of 90 feet wide, but only an uninterrupted opening that's about 50 feet. There are still some columns kind of in the way that are hanging, at least, beyond that 50 feet. So the tail section would have hit above this second floor hole. And the windows directly in the path of the tail are not even broken. And this seems to be impossible. If you've got a plane coming in, and it's supposed to have come in at 530 miles per hour, which is incredibly fast. I'll also mention the fact that there were some extremely credible and compelling witnesses interviewed by a group called Citizen Investigation Team that put the path of the plane entirely up to the north of the Citgo gas station, which was across the street. And this path, and they also, when they drew the path on a photograph they were given, an aerial photograph, they pretty much all drew a right bank to the plane. And these people were in different places. Some of them worked at the gas station. Some of them were cops who were stopping for gas. Some worked at the cemetery. And yet they all saw the same path. And this path is completely irreconcilable with the physical damage. If the plane was north of the gas station, it could not have hit the light poles that it is alleged to have knocked over. In fact, two of the witnesses that CIT interviewed couldn't even see the plane for most of its approach had it been on the official path. William Lagasse, the Pentagon cop, the canopy of the gas station would have been blocking his view of a plane coming in on the official path. So he clearly describes that it was on a different path. Leaves the inescapable conclusion that the damage was staged.
So people in the movement, some think there was a plane there, but it was higher and it didn't hit the building.
Well, that's right. I mean, there are, as I said earlier, there are different theories that people have who don't believe a plane impact occurred. But certainly I'm one of the people who believes that the evidence is very strong that a plane did approach the building, that it didn't hit. In fact, the flight data recorder, the National Transportation Safety Board, released an animation based on the data from the flight data recorder. And that animation shows the plane on the north side of the Citgo gas station and also too high to have hit the building. So the government's own evidence undermines their own claim that the plane came in on the south path and hit the building.
And if a 757 was going at 530 miles per hour and was so low to the ground, as this one supposedly was, in order to be able to hit the first floor of the Pentagon, wouldn't there be something called the ground effect that would make it fall apart before it could actually hit the building?
Yeah, that's something I know a lot of people have pointed that out, and it's not something I've studied the science of closely, so I'm not sure I would be the best one to try to argue for that, but certainly that claim has been made. The speed of the plane as well, you know, it's the government saying that it was 530 miles per hour. We don't really have any independent confirmation of that. In fact, some of the witnesses that CIT interviewed had the plane going considerably slower than that. But the government's claim is 530, so that, I think they have to defend that. If they're going to claim that that's what the speed was, then I think they have to deal with the ground effect issue that you're raising. It does seem impossible to think that a plane could be going that speed. And also, there's another thing to know as well, and that's that the official flight path would go right through Virginia Department of Transportation a tower, which is 169 feet high, and it was within a couple of thousand feet, 2,400 feet, I think, of the Pentagon. So for that plane, Pilots for 9/11 Truth has done a study on this, and for the plane to have flown above that tower, and then it would have to descend so fast in order to hit the first light pole that the G-forces would have been impossible for the plane to pull out of that dive and then to go across parallel to the ground, just a few feet above the ground, and into the building. So there's a big problem with that. And there's also the video that a lot of us have seen that shows some kind of a blur. But if you watch Massimo Mizuko's film called September 11, The New Pearl Harbor, he shows some research by another Italian researcher that the two views that we have seen, because they're almost from identical angles, one was inside of a parking booth and one was in the barrier right in front of the booth. So they were almost identical and they were synchronized using what's called a multiplexer. And you can see that the frames match up just by the shape of the smoke cloud. But there's only one frame of the two pairs that doesn't match up, that should match up, and that's the one with the alleged plane in it. So this indicates, I think, clearly that one or both of these pieces of video were doctored, because we should have seen the same thing from just a slightly different angle.
Yeah, I've seen that video. I think we've showed it here at the college, Mazzucco's film about the new Pearl Harbor. And that's where I learned that thing about the ground effect. And then there's also the pilot, Hani Hanjour, who they said did this, who was supposedly flying that plane. And, of course, according to all of his flight school teachers, he was the worst pilot they'd ever seen and that kind of thing. I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Well, sure. I mean, some of the flight schools he dealt with, one of them wanted to know whether his pilot's license actually was genuine. They actually doubted that it was actually genuine because he was such a poor pilot. He was refused rental of a Cessna two-seater plane a month before 9/11. There was even inquiries made by one flight school about whether his piloting license should be revoked because he was so bad. One of them said, I can't remember the name of the person who said it, but they said basically he could not fly at all. His skills were so poor. And this is a person who is supposed to have flown for the first time in his life a Boeing 757.
Yeah, making that miraculous turn at such a high speed.
The spiral descent, yeah.
I think most thinking people do not believe the government's official account of this. But you had mentioned earlier that you think the burden of proof falls on them, on the government. And I agree with you on that. But what have they shown about the Pentagon? There's supposedly like 80 or more cameras at the Pentagon, and they haven't released nearly all of those videos, if there were any, of a supposedly plane hitting. I don't know if you have any information on that you want to add?
Well, just there were freedom of information requests made for that, and the government, the answer that came back was that there was only the one camera view, or I guess the two, because they were almost the same, that would have captured a plane. I don't know the exact wording they used, whether it was did capture a plane, and they also confiscated all the video from the surrounding businesses within 10 minutes of the event. all that video was scooped up.
Never to be seen again.
You know, there's, some of it's been released, but it doesn't show a plane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this one, I think it's from the Doubletree Hotel, where you can see in the background, you can see the explosion, and you can see the big smoke cloud going up, but you don't see a plane. So, yeah, basically, they have not shown, I mean, there should be tons of video that would, had there been a real plane, the Pentagon has so many cameras, and the assertion made by some people that, well, they only shot at one frame per second, and so it's not surprising it wouldn't capture it. I mean, this is an absurd, absurd claim. It's the Pentagon, for God's sake. Are people really asserting that your corner convenience store has better surveillance, video surveillance than the Pentagon? It's ridiculous.
Exactly. And I think, I can't imagine that on a building like the Pentagon, they must have had even some kind of a weapon system on the roof of it or something for just that kind of a thing happening.
Yeah, I don't know that that's ever been completely proven, but there's certainly a lot of indications that they did have that. We know for a fact that the White House did. It had surface-air missiles. So
right,
the idea that the Pentagon would not is kind of hard to swallow.
I agree. So tell us this apparent controversy, as you call it, within the 9/11 truth movement about the Pentagon. What are some of the evidence that the opposing people have, if you've studied that a little bit? Do they have any convincing evidence for what they're saying? That it was a 757?
Not as far as I'm concerned, no. In fact, they basically echo the government's position on almost everything. I mean, of course, they're quick to point out that they don't agree with the official story, and they don't think Hani Hanjour was flying the plane and all that. But beyond that, they pretty much, as far as I can see, kind of rush in to prop up that story. And when strong evidence emerges that is beneficial to the truth movement, because it pokes a hole in that official story, this group seems to be more concerned with going after the new evidence than it does going after the official story. So I think there's a big issue with that. The latest thing is that the claim is being made that Lloyd England, who's the taxi driver whose cab was supposedly hit by a pole, knocked over, which is a completely ridiculous story as well. But they're claiming that, you know, all the way along, the story has been that this first light pole that the plane supposedly came in contact with, that the pole got hit by the plane's right wing and was knocked into his cab. But in fact, the story doesn't hold up at all, because first of all, the plane was crossing the highway, so the pole somehow had to get through the fuselage of the plane as it was going across the highway. And plus, it was hit by the right wing, which, because it's not perpendicular to the plane, it's kind of back, the pole should have gone forward and to the right, but instead it goes 150 feet up the road to the left and impales England's cab, supposedly, and leaves a hole, which you can see in photographs, that you would have a hard time getting a tennis ball through the hole in the upholstery, allegedly made by this more than 20-foot long pole hurtling through the air after being hit by a plane going 530 miles per hour. Not only is that completely ridiculous, but even the idea that the wings of the plane could hit five light poles at that speed and not rupture and not explode before even getting to the Pentagon, kind of unbelievable.
Yeah, and then if this light pole supposedly went through Lloyd England's window and he comes out unscathed and he's out walking around, doesn't make sense to me either.
Not only is he unscathed, but the hood, I mean, the thing that supposedly went through the windshield and stuck into the back seat, the hood doesn't have a scratch on it. And the story is that he stopped the car, and some guy in a van stopped and helped him pull the pole out of the car. Why he would do this immediately after this event is kind of beyond me. And how, I mean, this is a man that was in his late 60s at the time. So why they would, I don't even know if they physically could do that. I highly doubt it, but certainly why they would do it is a mystery. And the group that I'm talking about, this group of researchers, is now saying, oh, it wasn't the first pole, it was the second pole that was on the other side of the plane, and it was just a small part of the pole. Even though Lloyd England has been absolutely clear that it's the long part of the pole, the part that is attached to the ground, he said it many times, and now this particular group is trying to convince us that they're trying to change the story so that it fits the evidence better. And I think that's wrong.
And we also know, due to the great research of Barbara Honegger, that there were explosions going off in the Pentagon that morning.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something Barbara has talked about for many years now. And there's people inside the Pentagon who smelled cordite. Several people reported that. There's the explosion in that April Gallup experienced, and her office was well to the north of the alleged impact point. There's also a part of the foundation in the path of what would have been in the path of a plane, in the damage path, that was blown up as if from below. And this is even mentioned in the Pentagon building performance report. So there's no particular explanation for how that could have happened. There's also no explanation for the round searing hole, because the plane clearly would have lost, even that report I just mentioned says the plane would have completely lost structural integrity before it even went past halfway to that hole. So how does a plane that's been ripped to shreds, allegedly, create a round exit hole? Makes no sense.
Right, it doesn't make any sense. Craig, if somebody wanted to sign your list of people who agree with the statement, no 757 hit the Pentagon, how could they go about doing that?
Well, there's a couple of different ways. They can go to the website, which is truthandshadows.com, and the current post is the list itself with an introduction that I wrote, but below my introduction you'll see the full list, all 673 names or whatever it is exactly. So you can just go to the bottom of that, go to the comments at the bottom and just put your name in there and ideally maybe the city you live in, just so we can give the list a little more meat to it than just by, you know, just putting names. So yeah, if you're just put the city and state or whatever, and you can also email me at truthandshadows@yahoo.com. And we also have a Facebook group that's been created with over 600 members, more than 600 members, and that group is called, appropriately, No 757 Hit the Pentagon on 9/11. So you're welcome to join that group, and you can leave a comment there that says you'd like to be added to the list. So hopefully there are enough different ways that people can do it, or they can send me a private message on Facebook, Craig McKee, and I'll make sure that they get added to the list. I hope we can make this as big as possible so that we can be as, I guess, united as it is possible to be in opposition to the official story of what happened at the Pentagon.
Exactly. And you know, this group that is saying that it was a large plane or a 757, one of the things that kind of rubbed me the wrong way about it is that they wrote an article saying that now this is the definitive proof that whatever, I don't remember their exact words, but it was to that effect that this is the definitive proof of the Pentagon that there was this large plane. And it's just a couple guys writing this article, so it's kind of arrogant to say we have the definitive proof here.
Yeah.
And we see that there's only like a few of them who have backed this view, and that you have created this list with over now 673 people. So I think that it shows that they don't have a lot of support in their views for this. And I'm not knocking anybody who wants to do research, and they may believe in what they're saying, but to say that it's the definitive proof, I think, is on the side of arrogance. Anyway, so I don't know if you have anything you want to add to that. Or.
Well, I just agree with you. I mean, there's an article by a guy named John Wyndham where the headline is Bringing Closure to the Debate About the Pentagon, or words to that effect, but bringing closure. In other words, he's ending the discussion because it's an exercise in spin is the best way I can put it. They use manipulative language to try to convince us that a consensus is forming around their view, and this is absolutely false.
Yeah, and you know, I really like a few of the people that are in that minority group, and they're entitled to their beliefs, but I do think that the way you're handling it, where you're having people sign up and they can agree or not agree, but you're not forcing an opinion down someone's throat, you know, and so I appreciate that.
No, and I think that you see the benefits of it, because when we have discussions in the Facebook group, people aren't fighting about whether it was a missile or the plane flew over or some other possible theory. You know, Barbara Honegger and I, we don't agree about, you know, everything about what happened, but we agree on the fundamental point. So we can be allies. Instead of being in different camps debating, we can be on the same team, you know, standing up for this fundamental statement. That's, I think, the benefit of doing this.
Right. It creates a strength in the movement, I think. And also, it's a strong stance to say, no, the 757 didn't hit the Pentagon. You know, that's our belief based on evidence. As a united front, I think it unites us in a way that we've never been united.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I mean, to have a plane crash, you need a plane, and they don't have a plane.
Right.
We have a few scraps outside that just seem to appear kind of in the middle of the lawn that one wonders exactly how they got there.
Mm-hmm.
Small pieces of fuselage that just happened to show a part of an American Airlines letter from the fuselage. There's no just plain silver. It's always got that part of one of the letters so that you really know it came from a plane. You know,
right,
sarcastic.
Right.
But, yeah, I think the evidence is overwhelming, and I don't really understand why people in the movement would spend years trying to convince us that the government's crash impact scenario is actually correct. It's a mystery to me.
And, you know, they've had an opportunity to present their information, and then let's leave it at that, but it's like it's a continual push to push that, and I don't understand that either. Anyway, Craig McKee,
yeah.
Is there anything we haven't discussed today that you'd like to say to our listening audience before we have to pause?
I think we've covered it pretty well. I'm